All right, our next speaker is Matt Roening. He's Director of Engineering at Sony Corporation and Chair of MIPI Automotive Working Group. Matt is serves as Chair for the MIPI Automotive Working Group. He's made significant steps leading the group that provides input and coordination on requirements to ensure MIPI is addressing the needs of the automotive industry. Help me to welcome Matt.
Good morning, everyone. I know probably most of you are here to hear about MIPI's interfaces that are used in the mobile device, but I'm actually here to talk about automotive and how we're branching what MIPI calls it. If you look at an automobile, actually, in some respects, it look a lot like a smartphone, and so a lot of the work that's been done develops interface or smartphone to the car, to the automobile kit. Of course, the automobile is much bigger, so you can imagine you might be required to support longer cable lengths, and that's definitely one of the big activities. Over different types of cable, not just microstrip or strip line, but also over coax and shielded pair type, and also over much longer lengths, a third of a meter or a meter type range for extending out to. So let me go ahead and kind of go forward here. In addition to the fact that we're trying to expand into adjacent markets, one of the things that's a little bit unique about the automotive market is how fast it's changing. And that's something you don't really expect with automotive. Usually automotive is very slow, a long time to get to market. Things don't change that fast, but actually we're at what is kind of like a perfect storm in terms of the automotive. And some of the things that are happening is there's worldwide new car assessment programs that many of the governments have put into place that are slowly increasing the safety for automobiles that can be sold in there. And that's leading to things like need for advanced driver assistance, lane departure warning kind of system, backup cameras, so to avoid backing little children, particularly in the U.S., those kinds of things. That's one factor, is government regulations. But another issue is actually aggressive fuel economies. And that also is driven by, in larger part, by government, but also by customers' desire for better and lower cost of operation. Then in addition to that, there's electric the car that's somewhat, and then in addition, you have a lot of new Ubers, in some cases shared car, whereas it used to be the case that cars built to last 10 years, in a shared model where you're actually a vehicle, two cars which last that quite a bit. And then, of course, the holy grail is driving. Autonomous driving, there's a lot of reasons why that's attractive and why that's driving the expected autonomous driving plummeting for.
Oh, they will. Oh, okay. All right. Sorry. They're expecting that autonomous systems will actually significant decreases mortality to accidents, and especially pedestrian accidents. A lot of the efforts of the new car assessment program actually save the driver, so the driver can survive the accident. But unfortunately, the driver, pedestrian, there's very little that's going to protect those guys unless you get some additional intelligence to operate the car. So it's a perfect storm. MIPI is expanding into this new industry. And getting a handle on exactly what the requirements are is a little bit difficult. This is a bit of an eye chart. I won't go through all the details here, but one of the first things that happens whenever you think about adding ADAS or autonomous systems is proliferation of sensors. Those sensors can be radar, LIDAR, camera. Camera is a big one. Of course, other sensors and new displays may come into use in terms of functional. I mentioned automotive economy, or fuel economy. This also is a little bit difficult to read, but I think the general trend is visible among all countries. Governments are pushing higher fuel economy, and what kinds of impacts are that having? It's, if you're not following the automotive industry, you may not be aware, but in various regions of the world, Europe and Japan in particular, the concept of mirrorless cars, mirrorless side mirror cars, is coming into the fore. And the idea is that you remove the side mirrors, replace it with a camera that had the same field of view, instead of the driver looking at the side mirror, they actually look at a display that's on the side of the inside of the door of the car. And that can save fuel mileage anywhere from 3 to 7%. So it's a fuel mileage savings. But in addition to that, since the camera can actually have IR cameras, night vision, you could actually have a side mirror that gives you better visibility off to the back of the car. So that could be another advantage. I mentioned automated driving. There's, of course, various government and industry organizations define in different ways, but there is a big split between the driver being in charge of the car and control of the car, or the computer actually, and that transition happens around 3 or 4 or the SAE. We're starting to see large companies that apply graphics processors or PUs getting active in the automated vehicle market. It was actually kind of NVIDIA's announced 2016, the world's first supercars. And it's interesting too, looking at the number of teraflops that are going to be supported by those in-car supercomputers, and listening to NVIDIA's CTO talk about how your car is going to be a mobile supercomputer driving. So what does an autonomous driving system look like? Well, this block diagram gives you a bit of an idea, a little bit more detail. So there's going to be cameras, radars, and lidars. I already described that. Possibly ultrasonics, maybe even sound as an input. Also, knowing location via GPS or one of the other location technologies. Then you'll have a sensor fusion ECU, and that will drive the action engine that controls the vehicle. And of course, there will be displays as backup. So given this kind of block diagram, what kind of data rates do we think is necessary, particularly on the surround sensor and the display, which are the high data rate? Well, if you look at image sensors, a 10 gigabit per second link would probably be necessary. And of course, this is for vehicles that are this is for sensor the periphery of the vehicle. In the case of radar, it could actually be higher, like 12.5. And in fact, in some machine, it could be as high as gigabits necessary, depending on number of radar. For the digital subsystems, the target for the MIPI Alliance support displays the current generation of A-PHY with gigabits, which we believe is enough to support an. So, hold it up a little. Okay, yeah. So, there's obviously a need to support high data rate going into these main processors, and the data rates that you've seen so far in the 10 to 16 gigabit range need to be supported in the near future. What are the other reasons? Why should MIPI serve that market? Because the market is currently being supported by two existing kinds of standards, although they don't necessarily meet the high data rate yet. So the two kinds of existing standards are what is termed LVDS. These are a variety of proprietary interfaces that actually the LVDS is a misnomer. It tends to be a current mode logic that's being used. But the problem with those proprietary LVDS solutions is they're all mutually incompatible. And if you're an OEM, you would like to buy from multiple sources. You would also like to have the source one's transmitter interoperate with source two's receiver. And currently, that's not the case. So that's one of the reasons why the automotive industry would like to standardize the LVDS interface. In addition, there's another very popular interface that you've probably heard of is automotive Ethernet, and it is true that IEEE is developing a 10 gigabit per second interface that I think will satisfy a really good segment of automotive needs, primarily core ECU processor to processor kind of links. One of the differences with IEEE is that it's symmetrical link, so it's not optimized for high data rate in one direction, going towards a process or going from processor in a high throughput to a display. IEEE tends to be equal data rates going both directions. In addition, the second block diagram shows that usually IEEE involves having a fairly complicated stack, which then drives the need for additional complexity on one end or the other of the or both of the data link. And so that's an additional complexity that drives cost. And one thing that the automotive industry definitely prefers to do is to miss cost. So there's actually demand from the industry to MIPI, some kind of market pull to MIPI to enter this area to help standardize, particularly in an LVDS-like kind of interface. But what are some of the cautionary points? Because as I mentioned whenever I began the talk, we're primarily a mobile-oriented interface-specific development organization. Well, whenever you step away from consumer and you go towards automotive, there's a lot of things that you should be aware of. Number one, you need to make sure that you're not reproducing existing standards which already are very competitive, such as CAN or MOST or some of the others. Definitely CAN is pretty competitive. But you also have to be careful. There's some cautionary points, and that is that there's a large number of differences in designing electronics for automotive versus consumer, and I'll get into those. One other thing I should mention is that actually MIPI interface specifications are already in the vehicle. So we see this in some of the processors that are targeting autonomous driving. It's a good solution. So I mentioned that automotive is quite different from consumer. So what are some of the things that are different about automotive? Well, almost everything. But one of the things that you really have to be aware of is the different standards. Probably the most important and significant of these is ISO 26262, which is a functional safety standard. If you have a vehicle driving you, you want to make sure that that vehicle is actually going to do so in a safe manner, and that all careful consideration has been given to every possible failure mode, and that the designers have designed in limp-in modes or alternative workarounds so that the failure of one interface or one sensor or display does not cause an accident. But there's also other standards that apply, like AEC Q100 or TS16949 and MISRA C for software development. So those are all some of the more important differences. One thing that I would just comment, though, going back to ISO 26262, is it also requires a whole different change in methodology of design. So if you have parts that you hope to get into, if you're a part, you know, electronics parts supplier and you hope to get into automotive, you really should be changing your design process in order to be compatible with ISO. So in some cases, it requires that change in thinking at the very beginning of the design, which can lead to lead-in. So not also to overload you with detail, but automotive interfaces are quite complex. This is an interesting example that we've studied quite a bit from an IEEE article for a somewhat high-end vehicle. And actually, if you look at automobiles, the wiring harness is the third most expensive and the third heaviest component of the vehicle. And so that gives you some idea of how important the... So given that kind of preview, what's MIPI Alliance been doing? Well, as was mentioned during my introduction, I chair the Automotive Working Group. And so there's a number of other working groups. Display is DWG, CWG is Camera Working Group, and then there's also Sensor Working Group, which just heard something about. So we've been engaged with all of those, initially starting with camera in specific, because that'll leverage over to radar and LIDAR types of interface. We started our activities in 2017. We had a kickoff at a meeting in Barcelona. We opened up to a lot of industry non-members of MIPI and basically spent about 6 months gathering requirements and listening to gathering data that would help us develop the best value proposition for the Automotify, and then began creating a requirements document, which version one was completed back in July, and that was handed over to the FI working, and they're working, created a new working group, subgroup to start work. So, and we have regular meetings, face-to-faces, and also several interim helped us along. We're expecting the development of camera and display protocol stacks, which will sit on top of the AFI data link or physical layer interface in towards the end of 2019. So I mentioned the progression of documents. We went through about four different phases, going from version 0.56 to version 1. So what's in that document? I'll just give you a little bit of a highlight. So from a logical structure, what you can see is that from the process. So this is a logical description of the AFI requirements. One is it's required that the AFI support the distribution of power, particularly for small camera modules, so that those camera modules don't have to have additional wiring to provide power to them. And so that's limited to a half of an amp at 12 volts. So roughly 4 or 5 watts kind of power levels. There are some cases when automotive cameras are required to, and so in that case, in addition to that, I mentioned that there's a unidirectional high-speed data path, whether that's a sensor in the case of this from the sensor unit to the processor, or whether it's display data from the processing unit to the display unit. And then there's a control path that, and by the way, that high-speed unidirectional data I already mentioned to 16 gigabits per second. The control data path, we're talking a logical structure, supports up to. So in terms of the high level physical layer design, the PHY is shown here. That's it include in this case our short nomenclature for the device that we're specifying includes data link layer as well as the physical layer. There's a cable and includes both unidirectional speed data as well as the bidirectional. And there's a number of use cases that have been developed in the document. That's about pages. Those use cases include a camera ECU, TCU, radar, LIDAR, and also display, as well as slightly. So I mentioned that cable length is much longer. Included in the document is a description that the AFI must support cable lengths up to 15 meters with 4 inline connectors, and in the coax variety type of cable. In the case of STP or SPP, shielded differential pair, usually the length of the cable is shortened, the greater in type of, but on the advantage side, it's much higher. I mentioned that there we support up to 16 gigabits per second in terms of raw data rate. But we find 5 gears, roughly 2 gigabits per second, 4 gigabits, 8, 12 and a half, and 16. And then there's a reverse channel as 2 modes, one's low speed and one's high speed. That's aimed at display application. There's a lot more specifications in the document. I would encourage those who are interested in seeing it to join MIPI Alliance. You can get a copy of that. I'll just skip around to some of these. The bit error rate needs to be less than 10 to the minus 12 for both data and control. We have a latency requirement that's maximum microseconds. I already mentioned the power supply over data lines, coax supported. I think we will support various levels of bit and some diagnostics. We also provide guidance on what the insertion loss, return loss, and coupling requirements are for the system cabling. And I think, very importantly, we designed the requirements to require this interface specification to support up to ISO 26262 ASIL-D automotive safety level. Okay, so then in terms of current areas of work, we're obviously not standing still. We're actually updating our automotive requirements document to a version 1.1. Some of the changes in that have included some additional requirements focused on EMC, RF ingress, and other types of noise and interference to better define the channel model. We've also included a requirement that the designers of the specification think about a path going from 16 gigabits to 24 gigabits. That's not mandatory at this stage, but it definitely sets the target. As I mentioned, we're also working on some derived channel requirements. Many of the specification automotive requirements document were at a high level, so that means that they may apply better to the total vehicle, or they may apply better to to an ECU. But when you're designing an interface, you need most of the thresholds referenced to the, and so deriving those requirements down to the IC level is an ongoing activity. We are also looking at link and adaptation layer requirements. The goal was to get the requirements for the PHY layer out soon, because that's the long pole in the tent. Now that we've done that mostly, we're taking a look again at I mentioned functional safety, cable type. We're always interested in engaging with cable and connector manufacturers to find out what's coming up next of better cable. And we also had a discussion, in fact, this week to engage with a sensor thing. One other unique thing I would say is the automotive work group is a system engineering group that's trying to create requirements so that the other working group develops. So one of the things that causes us to do is also track unique things that are happening, other standard, other interface, like, for example, BFI, because there's a lot of good ideas that come out of there and more basic. And so actually there was a pretty interesting new application proposed by Sony for a MIPI DFI multi-drop interface, or change to the interface. And what this would allow is, particularly in the case of drones, but also virtual reality of glasses, where there's a desire either make use of application processors that have very limited I/O, or links service of virtual reality glasses where you want the cable to be very thin. And so one of the ideas was to support a multi-drop approach where multiple sensors wouldn't require their own inputs, but they could be synchronized so that you could take the same picture and store it and retransmit it from multiple cameras on 360 degrees. And if you're interested at all in this, I encourage you to take a look at the display booth that's out there. And this just provides a little bit more detail on how that's done. There's a phase shift associated with the camera in terms of the transmission. But it's the same. That means you get a flash and you get a review viewed as a series of. Final comments. There continues to be a lot of interesting work to do. I think it's one of the more exciting areas. As I mentioned at the beginning, there's a lot of new things happening in automotive. It's a big new market. If you think about mobile versus automotive, the mobile market is 2 or 3 billion units per year, and maybe you have one or two mobile phones. But vehicles, I believe projections are going to have a minimum of cameras as well as other per vehicle. And with annual production of vehicle approximately of about 100 million, 90 sensor devices may be out there. And so that it's not as big as the mobile market in terms of units, but again, going back, it's quite different. A lot of new specifications. I think that's it. If you're interested in more information, there's a couple of hyperlinks here embedded in the presentation, and I also encourage you to contact MIPI Alliance or myself.
Before you go, I would like to ask the audience if they have any questions for Matt. Any questions?
Yeah, Uk Kim from Alpha Solutions. I have a question especially for the PHY area. So you are mentioning about 16 to 24 gigabit per second. I think you're talking about possibilities of the cable, but could you comment about the glimpse of what kind of cable or STP, UTP, or the gauge, something? Can you, or number of wires, number of conductors, wires? Can you comment on this one?
We we've gotten a lot of data from TE Connectivity, from Rosenberg, and from Leone in terms of cables and connectors. I wouldn't say that we're endorsing any particular cable. What we've done, though, is we've tried to develop generic targets for insertion loss, return loss, and other parameters so that the designers of the specification understand what kind of overall parameters they have to work with. Particularly, of course, return loss is a big one. Insertion loss is a big one. On a 15-meter cable, you're looking at significant attenuation, particularly at the high frequency. So that may drive you in the direction of considering much higher order modulation, which would allow you to run the baud rate at a lower rate. But that's not a given. That's not a sure thing. There can also be other advantages maintaining a simple or a lower order modulation format that would allow you to have a lower power device transmit. So, does that answer your question?
So I asked a couple of questions, but could you comment on how many conductors in the cable? Is that?
So coax. So coax is a single center connector with a shield around it. That tends to be preferred because of low cost. However, because it's unbalanced, that means that you potentially have more possibility of susceptibility to RF ingress from noisy sources next to it, like a starter or something like that. The other cable that we're targeting is SDP. Shielded differential pair, so that means that there's two twisted wires in the center of the cable, then an insulating covering, and then a shield around. So typically you would be connecting to the. Of course, you'd be grounding the shield, but you have two twisted pair of cables of wires. Sorry, does that?
Do you have ESD target for?
No, we don't. We did not specify the ESD target other than to reference existing automotive requirements. And the automotive industry doesn't have, so we referenced existing ISO or IEC standards. However, in the automotive industry, it's very common to take the standard for ESD, for example, reference it and then say give exception. So oftentimes, different manufacturers have different requirements. So that's a long way of answering. No, we don't have anything other than the high level. Yeah, it depends on the customer.
And what about the life for the design? 2 years, you say, mentioned? That's 10 years.
I think typically MIPI interfaces are lasting, 5 to 10 years. What I was referring to at the beginning of my talk was because of this large change in the automotive industry, automobiles used to be designed for a 10 to 12-year lifespan. But that was because your typical family automobile is only driven, less than about 8% of the time. Most of the time it spends in your garage or parked in front of your house. And it's used very infrequently. But with shared use types of business models, you may actually see that vehicle used 90% of the time or 80%, which means it's on the road that amount of time. And when the shared ride companies look at their business case, they may actually decide that using parts that last for 10 years is too costly at that kind of a load. So they would rather just get rid of the vehicle after 2 years. So that's a possibility of how the industry may be changed.
Any more questions for Matt? So Matt, you talked about the ISO 26262 functional safety standard. Will AFI be compliant to the standard?
Yes. So we've got a pretty active process where the Automotive Working Group is reviewing specifications from each of the other working groups, display, camera, physical layer. And we have a functional safety expert that's actually my co-chair, Uwe, from Bosch. And he goes in and he does an assessment of the functional safety and then requests changes in the specification that would support that. So our goal is to support ASIL D, which is the highest level.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Any more questions for Matt before he goes back? No? All right. Thank you so much, Matt. Thank you for your great presentation.